please. Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-7100, James C. Stevens et al., appellant, which is U.S. Airways, Inc. et al., will be taken for the appellants with three appeals.
Mr. Nickens, good morning. We are trying to get the fan turned off, but in the meantime, if you would keep your...
Speak over the fan.
Your voices up, okay. And we'll keep ours up.
I'll try to do my best.
Thank you.
May it please the court, for the record, my name is J.C. Nickens. I'm here today on behalf of James Stevens and Richard Mahoney, the plaintiffs below and the appellates here on the granting of a summary judgment to the defendants. I sometimes think, Your Honor, that we make simple matters too complicated. And although this case is against the backdrop of a complicated statute, the issues in the case, I believe, are quite simple. U.S. Airways had a pension plan. The pension plan offered retiring airline pilots the choice between a lifetime annuity or a lump sum payment that was to be actuarially equivalent to the lifetime annuity. Many, many pilots chose the lump sum payment, which put financial pressure on the plan. And the plan adopted the simple expedient of delaying the payment of the lump sum payments, initially for 90 days, and then upon complaints and upon agreement with the airline pilots union, they shortened that to 45 days. Mr. Mahoney and Mr. Stevens complain about that because that payment is not actuarially equivalent to that of the annuity.
Let me ask you something. If we find that the 45-day delay is reasonable and also contemplated so that the benefits commencement date sets what the lump sum recipients get, and we don't consider the 45-day delay as a late payment, why is the lump sum that they receive 45 days not actuarially equivalent to the benefits commencement date amount?
Well, because the calculation requires the assumption of a payment date. We're talking about present valuing a stream of payments, which requires an assumption about payment. And it is admitted that the assumption made in making this actuarially equivalent was that payment would be made on that date, and payment is not made. So the simple answer, Your Honor, is that it is impossible for those two for a late payment to be actuarily equivalent to that of a...
That's why I said, what if we don't consider it a late payment?
It's after the assumption of the date that was made as the payment would be made. There has to be an assumption about payment. It is agreed that that assumption was on the benefit commencement date. Now, the argument has been made since in this court and below, but that's simply not the case. The payment is what determines whether or not it's actuarially equivalent.
But if you, if your client were an annuitant, it could be up to 30 days before they got that first payment, correct?
No.
I mean, as I read it, it says your birthday, retirement date, or the first day of the following month, right?
Right.
So if your birthday were, say, April 2nd, you would not get that first payment until May 1st, right?
That's the terms of the plan, yes, Your Honor.
Right. Okay. So under the terms of the plan, that 30 days would be built into it if you were an annuitant. So now, are you saying that because you take a lump sum payment, somehow the actuarial equivalent requires you to get rid of that 30 days?
No, Your Honor. There are two calculations here. There's a calculation of the income stream of the annuitants, and that's reduced to a present value. Both of those require an assumption about a payment date, and that a payment date is the benefit commencement date for those assumptions. And then if you make the payment late, what if they never made any payment? What if they made the payment a year later?
Well, obviously, if they made the payment a year later, we would have a problem. But I'm just trying to understand, the 30 days would apply under the terms of this plan. So we're talking about 45 days. So are we talking about 45 days or the 15 days between the 30th day?
The payment is due. Now, payments may not be made, but if they're not made, as we've said, then they have to be made up for by the payment of interest in order to make them actuarially equivalent.
But, let me follow up on Judge Brown's question. The 30 days, say you're the April 2nd birthday and the May 1st date. May 1st is the date under that hypothetical dictated by the plan as the key.
That's the benefit commencement.
Right, and then it's 45 days on top of May 1st, so that would get you to mid-June.
Correct.
Under the PBGC's theory.
Your Honor. Whether you're an annuitant or whether you take a lump sum, the benefit commencement date was the date, the first of the date following your retirement, and that's the date on which payment was assumed for purposes of making these accounts.
Right, under the plan, that's the key date. Now, let me ask one other question. As I understood, you had two alternative arguments. One was essentially the payment date, keeping with the hypothetical, is May 1st and payment had to be made. But even if payment doesn't have to be made, if payment's made in mid-June,
right,
keeping with the hypothetical, that's fine under your alternative argument so long as the interest is...
That's correct, Your Honor. In order to make them actuarially equivalent, you'd have to pay interest, and the interest is specified in the plan.
If they went to a year, as long as they pay the interest,
I'm sure
that's actuarially equivalent. There may be a different problem.
Right. I'm sure there would be complaints about that. But yes, one could theoretically pay a year's worth of interest and they would be actuarially equivalent. You'd have a different complaint, I think, under those circumstances. Let me reach one argument in light of the limited time we have. And that is that the district court made an unwarranted and improper factual decision when she made the decision about this being a reasonable amount of time. You can see in the opinion she debates and weighs the evidence on both sides as to whether or not the delay was reasonable. And under the prevailing standards for summary judgment, she should have taken our evidence as being true, heard that evidence, and then determined whether she accepted it. But as it is, she as if a trial had taken place, made a decision that it was unreasonable. And if you take that unwarranted factual determination, there couldn't be any more factual determination than reasonableness. If you take that out, the opinion unravels because she relies on that. The lower court judge relied on that when she made her determination about whether this was actuarially equivalent, ignoring entirely the Contelli decision. Actually, not
entirely. Let's assume hypothetically that the time is reasonable. It is reasonable to take 45 days, just hypothetically. You still have your argument.
That they're not actuarially equivalent.
Right.
Yes. But
if it's unreasonable, then that's another reason why it's not, it's problematic.
Yes, Your Honor. That takes the rationale for this decision away. And although they may eventually win on that, I guess, when we have not had our opportunity to prove it. And as a matter of fact, the lower court relied heavily on the uncross-examined assertions of a counsel for the company who is on the other side of this issue. That was her primary evidence that she found as a basis for finding it was unreasonable and completely disregarding our evidence. I've reserved now a minute and a half, and I thank you.
All right, Ms. Breen.
Good morning. Jean Marie Breen for Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. Just to address the points that the plaintiff's counsel argued, their argument about actuarial equivalence assumes that the lump sum is to be paid on the benefit commencement date. This is not the case under the plan. Parsing through the provisions in the plan that set the benefit commencement date and that tell us when the retirement income, normal retirement income, will commence are provisions that tell us when the annuity starting date is and when payment of the normal benefit will commence. They are not provisions that are consistent with the theory that the lump sum is to be paid on the benefit commencement.
So that's their first argument, as I understood it. But even if you win on that, there's still the argument that if you're paying 45 days later, it has to be actuarially equivalent, and you have to pay the interest for those 45 days. And my concern is, as I understand your theory, in this case, for Stevens, the $485,477.22 that he received on January 14th, 1997, that was the amount that as of December 1, 1996, would have been actuarially equivalent to the lifetime annuity. Is that true? That amount, would that amount have been actuarially equivalent to the lifetime annuity on December 1, 1996?
That amount would have been actuarially equivalent to the normal form under a DB plan, which is an annuity.
Right.
But what plaintiff's actuary actually did was he took the lump sum value as of the benefit commencement date and merely added interest to it. And that's not an analysis of actuarial equivalent.
Why not?
That's an assumption that interest has to be paid if you pay
but after. But it's just common sense that $485,000, I'm just going to round it for now, $485,000 on December 1, 1996 would be worth more on January 14, 1997. You learned that in fourth grade.
In the normal world, that's true. But in ERISA, it's not.
What do you mean in the normal world? This, what's?
No, actuarial.
The terms equivalence. I agree with what counsel said. You know, equivalence. We make things too complicated sometimes. This seems pretty simple. That December 1, 1996 is not the same as January 14, 1997 in terms of the value of the money.
It is not. But in terms of actuarial equivalence, the IRS has indicated in regulatory guidance that there is a difference between making a payment and the annuity starting date.
I understand about the making the payment. In other words, when it actually arrives in the mail. I get that point. But that still strikes me as quite a bit different from saying 6 weeks later an amount, you know, this kind of money is exactly the same value as it would have been 6 weeks earlier. And as I understood you, this $485,000 on December 1, 1996 would have been equivalent on that date to the lifetime annuity. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Then it follows that you're saying $485,000 on December 1, 1996 equals $485,000 on January 14th, 1997, right? And I don't see how that passes the common sense test. Or put aside common sense, if you want to talk about the statute, equivalence. That's not equal.
But the equivalence is between the present value of the annuity form and the value
but the present value of the annuity form we know was on December 1, 1996, $485,000.
It was calculated as of that date. But given the IRS's distinction between payment and the commencement or the annuity starting date, then looking at the rest of the IRS guidance, which is a payment shall not be considered to occur after the annuity starting date merely because actual payment is reasonably delayed for the calculation of the benefit. In other words, they were recognizing reasonable delay to calculate the benefit. They said nothing about interest.
Yeah, I agree completely with that.
And ERISA doesn't either.
Well, that's where I have a problem, because ERISA says equivalence. actuarially equivalent.
But actuarial equivalence is not the
it's
same
not equivalence.
As the time value of money. And the plaintiff's expert...
What's your support for that last thing you just said? Actuarial equivalence is not the same as the time value of money. What is your support for that?
Well, the court looked, and we are looking, too, at the testimony of the plaintiff's expert witness, who was an enrolled actuary. And he was asked the question, is there a difference between actuarial equivalence and paying interest? And he said, yes, there is a technical difference.
Now, he says in his deposition that actuarial equivalence means the same value, the same actuarial present value or lump sum value as the annuity payable at, and then as an accrued benefit payable as an annuity at normal retirement age, which is, in this case, December 1st. So whatever he was entitled to on December 1st as a lump sum is the actuarial equivalence of this annuity that would have been payable as an annuity at the normal retirement age. Isn't that what your argument is?
No, we argue that the regulatory guidance applies to lump sums because of the language in the guidance itself and because of the fact that the lump sum is derived from the annuity form, which is the normal form. When a participant chooses the lump sum, he makes a choice between getting retirement income over the rest of his lifetime and getting it in a single payment. The plan made that clear, and the plan set no deadline.
But
the payment of the lump sum form, although it did...
So a year later would have been fine?
A year later, right?
Pardon?
A year later would have been okay to...
No, I think...
Well, what? When? How about 60 days?
60 days under the IRS regulatory guidance appears to be reasonable, but it's a
how about 90?
Fact and circumstances.
How about 90 days?
But it's a fact and circumstances.
Well, what fact and what circumstance?
What they had to do to calculate the benefit in the form of a lump sum.
Mm-hmm.
And the evidence that was...
Doesn't that strike you as a ripoff to the people who are saying that they're supposed to get the same amount as the person who chooses the lifetime annuity, and then it's delayed, the calculation is delayed, fine, I won't get it for a while, but at least I'll be kept equivalent to that lifetime annuity. It just seems like a ripoff.
But the balance that they get for that is they get the present value of their entire benefit a short time after the benefit commencement date. So if to them it's more important to have that sooner rather than over the remainder of their lifetime, that's the choice they're making. The SPD was entirely clear about that choice. The pension plan language is clear that there's no deadline for paying the lump sum, and the regulatory guidance is clear that if paid within a reasonable time, and the IRS mentions 90 days, it's not considered to be paid after the annuity starting date, if all payments are made, and merely actual payment is reasonably delayed to calculate
the benefit
amount. Let me ask you
about the district court's opinion, because your answer to me earlier was that is not your position. So you disagree with the district judge who on page 10 of her summary judgment opinion said, ERISA's actuarial equivalence rule requires only that the value of the lump sum benefit be the equivalent of the individual's accrued benefit. And then she says, plaintiff's own expert witness testified, and I read that already. So are you disagreeing with that? That's what I'd like to know.
No.
All right.
I did not intend to disagree with that. If I've said something that would lead to that conclusion...
Okay, that's fine.
I would certainly be happy to explain.
Okay.
What I understood the expert to say was that there might be a period that would be considered de minimis, but beyond that, then you weren't actually looking at actuarial equivalence. Do you agree with that?
At one point, their expert mentioned 30 days. He also said he did not know what reasonable delay to calculate benefits was. And we think that that's because it was a facts and circumstances determination. It depended on the benefit formula in the plan, how complicated it was, how long it took the company to calculate it. The other thing that plaintiff's argument wrongly assumes is that this is merely up on a motion for summary judgment and is reviewable de novo. U.S. Airways, as the plan administrator, had discretion to interpret and construe the plan. They also had discretion to make benefit determinations. They made a benefit determination on Mr. Stevens' claim in 1997. PBGC came forward with the record of that determination, which is their counsel's letter to Mr. Stevens' attorney, explaining the legal and factual reasons for the determination. In this circuit, where a plan administrator has discretion, the standard of review is plain deference. And so on the district judge's determination that U.S. Airways took a reasonable time to calculate the benefit amount, we respectfully suggest that that is reviewable under an abuse of discretion standard.
Did the plan say that if you choose the lump sum, you will get it at some period 45 days later and will not get interest for the interim period?
No, but that would be to state a negative. The plan...
No, that would be to state the accurate, right, under what happened. And it didn't say that, right?
The plan did not explicitly say that, but the plain meaning of the plan language was that, because the language of the definition of benefit commencement date is the language of annuity starting date. And tracking it through the IRS guidance on annuity tracking date, it follows the guidance, which is usually safe for someone drafting a plan.
Jake Brown, any questions? All right, we've got your argument. Thank you. Does Mr. Nickens have any time?
Mr. Nickens has a minute, 29 seconds.
Okay, why don't you take 2 minutes?
A few very simple points. Having a calculation is not the same as having a payment. Much was said here about the IRS guidance. All of that guidance relates to annuities and survivorship issues. And the counsel said this at the end, if all the payments are made. In other words, if you receive a payment on day one and it's 15 days late, then you get one 15 days late at the end. But this is different. We've got a single payment. The total amount for the people that, if there is a class certified here, is somewhere around $7 million for this interest. We do not agree, I should say, with the idea that the plan is silent on the question of when the lump sum is payable. That argument is made at page 12 of our brief, and it's too detailed for me to get into in the minute that is left, but we do not agree that the plan is silent. It is inherent in the idea of present valuing, and I go back to the earlier argument, an assumption is made about when payment is made. The assumption is not made about when a calculation is made. There has to be an assumption in there for there to be actuarial equivalence.
Just to make sure that I understand your argument, you don't actually agree with your expert's view that a certain amount of time is de minimis. You would argue that there ought to be interest paid for that entire period? Is that your...
Yes. What I think our expert was saying, which is a difficult position, but what I think our expert was saying, he was talking about practicality versus legality. The practicality is that if there is some small delay in an annuity, then nobody is going to complain. And that doesn't happen. That's not our situation, which I think he eventually made clear. They focused on one aspect of his deposition, that is regretful from our point of view, but we believe is wrong. But what he was talking about was, as a matter of practice, the district judge relied on it, no question about it. And as to the issue very quickly about deference, I invite the court to read the opinion of the arbiter that made the ultimate decision here. He expressly said he was not considering any ERISA issues and only relied on one provision of the plan for saying that it was silent on the question of when the payment was to be made. And so very little deference can be made to that decision if one goes back and looks at the basis for it in terms of our complaint. I think I'm out of time, but I appreciate your hearing our arguments.
Thank you.